And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our Farron Pierce consultant team, who's going to present today on ridership forecasting. So I'll turn it over to Matt Haynes. Thank you.
Thanks, Riley, and good evening, everyone. We're excited to share a little bit more about the project's ridership forecasting approach with you all this evening. So I'm going to get started and then hand it over to my colleague, Hyun Kyung, to share a little bit more detail. On the next slide, you'll see that a bit of a timeline. And I think the important thing to mention here is that for ridership forecasting for this effort, we have the advantage of considering and looking at the results of a number of previous studies that have happened and been completed along the corridor. And that dates back to even before 2015. So more than 10 years ago, there's been some prior studies that have looked at how many people might use rail service or transit service along the corridor. But I did want to mention the original rail transit feasibility study that was completed in 2015, since that did go into a fair amount of detail on how rail transit could work along the corridor. It evaluated the feasibility of several different types of rail scenarios and different station concepts and service concepts. And that included some level of ridership forecasting to compare and contrast those alternatives. Another important thing to mention is that in 2016, Santa Cruz County developed its own travel demand model. That was a model that focused on Santa Cruz County to look at travel patterns by different forms of transportation, different travel modes, and how that might change and evolve over time within Santa Cruz County. So that's an excellent tool that we're able to consider and use for ridership forecasting. And so in 2021, the Transit Corridor Alternatives Analysis was completed. That did use the new Santa Cruz County Travel Demand Model to look at updated ridership forecasts along the corridor. And that effort did look at several different alternatives for electric passenger rail service and provided some ridership information there. So those are all excellent foundation points for considering our current effort in the zero emission passenger rail and trail project. We'll be able to use some of the old data and information, but then bring that forward to current conditions for the ridership process here. So wanted to start with just a little bit of the previous studies. Next slide, we'll get into a little bit more just on ridership forecasting in general. So we wanted to kind of provide an overview for those of you who might not be familiar with really what ridership forecasting is. But at its core, it's really an important tool as we think about transportation planning and how we can look into the future, how we can anticipate not just existing travel patterns might mean for transit demand and ridership, but also how future travel patterns might result in certain levels of ridership on the corridor. So ridership forecasting is a type of modeling. And we used a lot of computer-based tools and a lot of data to think about developing ridership forecasts. Some of the key points here are just that the result of this is looking at passenger demand. So we want to understand how many people might ride transit along the corridor, who they are, where they might be coming from, and where they might be going to. So we get that result from a ridership forecasting model. We can also account for different variables. So we can think about how population, economic trends, maybe just changing preferences for how people travel around, and then kind of aspects of seasonality and kind of weekend versus weekday travel patterns. All of those can influence ridership, and a ridership forecasting model accounts for many of those different factors. And then at the end of the day, that really helps inform the transportation planning process. It allows for decisions to be data informed and kind of some of the aspects of service along the corridor allows us to understand the trade-offs maybe differences between aspects of the service and how they might change overall ridership and use of the system. So that's just a quick overview of kind of what ridership forecasting is. I'm going to hand it over to my colleague Hyun Kyung to go into a little bit more detail.
Thank you, Matt. Next slide, please. So I'll be taking everyone into a deeper dive into, okay, we talked about ridership forecasts. What are the key steps that goes into these forecasting? And unfortunately, like Matt mentioned, it's not a crystal ball. There is a model that helps us and guides us through estimation of travel pattern of the future. So the two major inputs that the model takes are socioeconomic data, which can include anything from where people live, where do people work, what types of jobs are available in a certain area. That can also include what are some special landmarks that may attract or generate more trips than usual. For example, Santa Cruz Boardwalk would be a great example that attracts a lot of people, generates a lot of trips, generates a lot of jobs. UCSC, big university, would be another example. And the model also considers the existing transportation and transit network. And using these inputs, the model then generates, okay, how many trips will be generated from one zone traveling to another zone? And of the trips that were generated, how will these people travel? Will they travel by a car? Will they travel by transit, walking or biking? And then of the people that got assigned to transit, which route are they taking? What routes fit best fit their trip purposes? And then the final step, these trips get aggregated into results and gives us an estimate of how many people will be taking transit on a given day from what station going to this station and many more details regarding the forecast riderships. Next slide. So these are some examples of ridership forecasts that's been done in Bay Area. On the left is shown is a Bay Area rapid transit for 2022, looking 10 years into the future after COVID-19 happened, which was an event that caused a lot of ridership loss for many transit agencies. So how is the outlook looking like for BART, and how will they recover this ridership? And to the right is a forecast done for Caltrain business plan, looking ahead all the way out to 2040. And they have accounted for all the programs that they will be implementing from the current year up to 2040, including some projects notable like their Caltrain electrification project. Next slide. So why is looking ahead important, and how far do we exactly look? Opening year, we call, is what is when the construction of the project is expected to finish, and horizon year is when the many years past the opening year, and typically about 20 to 30 years from the opening year. The reason why two different distinctions of the years exist is because by the time the project first opened, the rail is mostly going to be used by the people that are already living in the cross proximity of these stations. But as the time goes on, travel pattern will slowly mold into the new trail lines. There might be new transit development that are coming in near these stations that are adding jobs and adding populations and increasing the density of the community around the station. And an example of that is what Caltrain business plan predicted, how their employment density would change along their lines across all the stations. Along with just land use changes, the transportation surrounding the stations could also change to enable easier access to the new stations that have been placed. And because of these local changes, that will occur surrounding the station and the rail line. It is important for us to look far ahead into the horizon year and much farther out than the opening year, so then we can make an informed decision of where to truly allocate resources, considering what will happen eventually. Next slide. And now that everyone is familiar with concept of ridership forecasting, I'd like to introduce specifically what models we are considering to propose for this separate project and specifically. So the first option that I'd like to propose is regional travel demand model. These are the models that include wide range of network of transportation networks and transportation infrastructure, not only within Santa Cruz County, but also the counties surrounding Santa Cruz County, that where there will be inter-county travels, and gives us a more holistic review of a bigger, a more long-range trips. And these include SEC model, as Matt described, and are maintained typically by planning authorities and is applicable to wide range of planning projects. Second option that we'd like to introduce is what's called a direct ridership model. And unlike the regional demand model, DRM is custom built for a specific transit project to focus on just a couple blocks around the stations rather than an entire county or entire region. And this is useful because it is way more sensitive to different alternatives, different transit network that we'll be testing out, and can give a much higher granularity in terms of results and transit related attributes. And of course, there are a lot more models that are not included in these slides. For example, STOPS model, which stands for Simplified Trips on Project Software. And these STOPS is typically only used by projects that are pursuing FTA funding opportunities. But FSTOPS could be done as a consequence steps farther out if that's the trajectory of the project. But at this point in time, with the consideration of the project team, we are considering the regional demand model and DRM only. Next slide. So there are the models, and there are two models. And what are the key considerations that are really important in capturing the unique characteristics of Santa Cruz County? And the three that I want to highlight are that providing regional context was one of the key components of this project, as the rail line is expected to be not only used by people in Santa Cruz County, but also people coming over the mountain or also coming up from the south. And another important factor is that recognizing tourism as one of the major economic sectors of Santa Cruz County, and how well can we capture not only people who are just traveling for work on a day-to-day life, but also people who are only traveling on a weekend, traveling on a seasonal basis, and being able to sensitively model that is an important consideration to have. And lastly, since we will be testing out different transit scenarios, how sensitive is the model in changes to the transit networks, services, or the line length was another key factors that we considered in deciding the model. Next slide. So against all the factors that I've mentioned, these are how each options of the model line up against these criteria. As you can see here, SCC model, the strength lies in regional context and also being able to incorporate transit network and service plan. DRM, on the other hand, maybe not so much of a regional context, but it can give very high granularity around the station area and is also very sensitive to transit. And the third option that I'd like to also mention is that we can also combine the SCC model with DRM. The outputs from the SCC model can be plugged into the DRM, which can now provide detailed station area customizations that we can accurately estimate different how project alternatives can influence the rail ridership. Next slide. So what is our final proposed ridership forecasting approach? Next slide. I might have spoiled it a little, but we'd like to proceed, propose the hybrid option of SCC model and DRM, and their strengths and weaknesses will complement each other very well, that we will be able to have a zoomed out understanding of how are these regions interacting and how are these inter-county travel happening in and out of Santa Cruz County. But then we also get the strength of being able to really zoom into specific regions around station area and be able to get a good picture of transit ridership in higher detail, higher level details. Next slide. So with this approach, I'd like to highlight some of the key outputs that we'll be able to use and inform the planning of the project. Through the model, we'll be able to estimate future demand and ridership of the rail system. And in turn, this will also inform us what is the ridership on a station level. Maybe there will be 20 people riding from Santa Cruz Station getting, and of those 20, 10 might be getting off at Capitola, another 10 will be getting off at the Watsonville Station. So we'll be able to provide that in the station level. Also, we will also be able to capture the mode shifts happening between alternative modes. Rail transit will be adding another method of traveling from one point in the county to another point. So how does that additional mode induce a mode shifts from maybe a car or maybe people who are walking before, who are biking before? How will that translate into a transit ridership? Will be another factor that we could capture through the models. Aside from the transit-related outputs, we can also learn from the model on various things, including what are going to be the future vehicle volumes on some of the major collector roads. Now that transit rail system might cause some mode shifts without some of the with some of the vehicles taken off of the road by the rail, what will be the final volumes on those roads? What is going to be the vehicle's miles traveled? And also on the trail usage, which is another key component of this project. And then next slide, please. And while ridership models are generally useful, I do want to mention that they are still just a tool in our toolbox, and it is indeed not a crystal ball, and they have some limitations. Human behavior is incredibly complicated to model and predict accurately. And these models are limited by the available data and the current assumptions that we know about the future, but those are limited as well. So recognizing those downfalls and shortcomings are important, and we will be working interactively with the SCC RTC team and other consultants to refine the model outputs and develop final ridership forecast that truly is calibrated to the Santa Cruz County specifically. With that, I will hand it off to Matt to briefly touch on some rail project examples.
Great. Thanks, Yankyung. Want to also share a little bit, while we've gone through the proposed approach and process for looking at ridership for the zero emission passenger rail and trail project. We also want to be aware of some of the other projects that have been developed and are now operational around the country, since we feel there's some lessons learned that can be useful for our process here. So I'm going to briefly go through a few examples. Next slide. One example that you might be familiar with is just north of here in Sonoma and Marin counties. So about 7 years ago, passenger rail service opened between Santa Rosa and San Rafael, and then more recently was extended to Larkspur and with a connection to the Bay Area ferry system. But that is a nearby example that we want to be aware of. And while there's a lot of differences between smart rail service and what we're envisioning for Santa Cruz County, there's maybe some similarities to think about too. But there are differences in terms of the type of service, the types of communities that SMART goes through have different densities, different development levels, different demographics, and different types of kind of travel patterns. So what it is different, but we also kind of can look to see what happened with some of the SMART rail forecasts. So next slide. We actually see this chart here shows total annual passengers on the SMART system for the past 7 years. And we see that ridership kind of initially went up, then went down quite a bit as a result of COVID, but then has rebounded in the last few years. And the fiscal year 24 is actually higher than the previous high back in 2019 before COVID. So SMART is the first Bay Area transit agency to fully recover its ridership levels beyond pre-COVID levels. So in some ways, there's some good examples here of having a service that meets current demand in kind of a post-COVID world. Also notable is a lot of SMART rail systems are located in city centers and historic depots. And because some of them are located in the center of town, you have the ability to capture shorter trips and trips to and from different community centers in Sonoma and Marin counties. So just a couple examples to note from the SMART rail system. Next slide. If we go farther south in California, kind of all the way to San Diego County, there's a couple other systems that provide some examples, and those are the Coaster and Sprinter lines. So the Coaster line is a commuter rail line between San Diego and Oceanside in North San Diego County. It runs along the coast and serves a lot of the coastal communities in between those two cities. It opened almost 30 years ago, so it's been in operation for quite some time. But then in 2008, an additional rail service in the county opened called the Sprinter Line, and that's shown on the kind of light blue line on the map. It goes inland from Oceanside into Escondido and provides a slightly different type of service, but it does, those two services do connect to one another in Oceanside. There's a lot of differences between what Coaster and Sprinter would what they are versus what we'd be thinking about in Santa Cruz County. A lot of the Sprinter and Coaster lines are maybe lower density areas or smaller communities, and the service connection in Oceanside is any different than some of the connections that we'd be thinking about here. And lastly, in San Diego is a very large city, and so you have a connection to a major metropolitan region at the south end of the line. So a lot of differences between the overall travel patterns, but maybe still some examples to think about. So if you go to the next slide, we can look at the different ridership levels between Coaster and Sprinter. The orange line at the top on your chart on the right is the Sprinter service, and just kind of how those ridership levels have changed between 2020 and 2024. So still a little bit below kind of pre-COVID levels. And then Coaster is the kind of teal line down lower. And also you can see it's almost recovered to pre-COVID levels, but just a little bit lower, and does have lower overall ridership than the Sprinter line. One thing to note, though, is that we do see quite a bit of weekend activity, specifically on the Coaster line. Their highest kind of average daily boardings are on Saturdays. So it is used by kind of non-commuters, and so recreational and kind of other types of travel are occurring on that system. to a level that actually exceeds some of the weekday ridership. So that's something that we might kind of, or we want to make sure that we're thinking about both weekend and weekday trips in Santa Cruz County. And so the Coaster Line does give us sort of some example of how weekday and weekend ridership changes depending on the system. Next slide. So with our just tour of some example transit systems, if we go all the way east across the country, we can look at another system that opened recently called Brightline. It is in some ways quite different than what we'd be thinking about in Santa Cruz County, but also kind of has some things to be aware of. So Brightline does serve two different and large metropolitan regions in Miami to the south and now Orlando to the north. Its service began in 2018, so about 6 years ago. It's gradually expanded over time and now does operate all the way between Orlando and Miami, with a future extension to Tampa being planned. So that's just kind of one example, but it's much longer distance trips. So we had the distances that we're thinking about are quite a bit different with Brightline compared to Santa Cruz. Next slide. And if we look at the ridership on Brightline, I think there's a few examples to think about. The Brightline system is interesting in that ridership levels were quite a bit higher than originally forecast. Short distance ridership, it was almost double what was originally forecasted when the line opened. So there were quite a bit of short distance trips that occurred. But then since the extension has opened all the way to Orlando, you have a lot of long distance trips that are a part of that system and contributing to quite a bit of ridership growth in the last couple of years. And then you see on the chart on the left, expected to continue growing ridership levels into 2025 and 2026. So we see in this system just sort of, it's been pretty successful by a lot of different metrics. Ridership levels as a result have been higher than expected. So shows that maybe kind of planning the system, thinking about how it can serve people's needs and the way that they're traveling around, both for long distance and short distance trips, can result in higher ridership levels. Next slide. So that kind of wraps up kind of our overview of the ridership process and some examples. I want to just close before I hand it back to Riley on kind of how we'll use your input. So do want to note that kind of your questions and input tonight will be helpful throughout the process, both for kind of how we're collecting data and then using it, and how the model development and results refinement process goes as we're thinking about kind of how we use the model, and then think about how to kind of process and refine the results and sort of using kind of other tools and making sure that they're doing a good job of giving us results that can be useful for the project. Kind of there'll be an opportunity to review some of the preliminary ridership forecasts once those are developed at the conclusion of the process. So with that, I will hand it back over to Riley, but thanks for the opportunity to share some of our kind of some of the process on ridership this evening.
Great, thank you, Matt. And Youngkin, next slide. And next slide. So with wrapping up the meat and potatoes of the presentation tonight, that brings us up to the milestone 3 engagement, which we are about to kick off here for the Zero Emission Passenger Rail and Trail Project. The virtual open house in milestone number 3 is going to kick off. It shows mid-November on the slide here, but we're actually going to pull that forward and launch it in early November. Hang tight for the date of the actual launch, which we'll be broadcasting when we have an official launch date set. That will be open through December 20th, and it will provide an opportunity for community members and stakeholders and partner agencies to see a lot more detail on what Milestone 3 is about, and provide questions and provide input on various items such as ridership, like we talked about today, but also other topics such as the funding topics, which we had the information session last week, and station locations, station amenities, different updates that we've had for the alignment. So quite a lot of information coming your way. So keep your eyes out for e-blasts and for communications from the RTC about those opportunities for community input. And along with the virtual open house is the community workshops. We've got two community workshops coming up in mid-November, November 12th in Watsonville and November 13th in Santa Cruz. We will be presenting some of the similar information as in the virtual open house, but giving some opportunity for some activities to go alongside the questions and the input that you'll be seeing in the virtual open house, particularly with respect to the station locations and station features, some activities centered on those. And then on December 7th, we will have a public hearing at the RTC regularly scheduled meeting to present another opportunity for the community and for stakeholders and the commission to get engaged with the process for milestone number 3. Next slide. And then here is a recap of where we're at with the project concept report schedule. We are entering into milestone 3, as I mentioned before, which is the green section on the screen, where we're going to provide inputs and updates on the conceptual alignment revisions and updates that have been happening over the last several months, as well as I mentioned before, the station locations and features, and then other items such as the ridership approach, which we have today's information session on. And then after that, we're going to enter into the final milestone, which is coming about in winter 2025. And wrapping up in spring of 25 with the final concept report. Next slide. All right, and I'm going to hand it back to Tammy, who is going to